This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Herding Code, being recorded on October 13th, 2011. Today's guests are the team that built Truffler.net. Truffler is a solution for building advanced search and querying functionality for websites and other data-centric systems. It's offered as both as a hosted service and as through dedicated servers. And we'll talk to this team. I'd like everyone to go out and introduce themselves. Maybe Joel, you could start.
So my name is Joel Abrahamsson, and I live in Stockholm, where I work as a consultant during the days and with Truffler during the nights. Been working primarily with various content management systems for the last couple of years, but also community-related sites and so on, often medium-sized to large public websites.
My name is Marcus Granström. I also live in Stockholm, and I work as a consultant during the day as Joel, and with Truffler during the nights. I work as an enterprise search consultant, building search solutions for various corporations and organizations.
Just want to add that Henrik is also the biggest search geek that I've ever met.
And is that the reason we have Truffler?
I guess so, or part of the reason. I think part of the reason is that first me and Henrik met, we worked for the same customer. We came from very different angles, me from the perspective of building the site and querying for data from a more database-centric perspective, while he came from search. And we sort of met in the middle and saw that we could combine our different skills and build something that we think is pretty awesome.
And you've built something that has a REST API, so you can use this from .NET or Java or JavaScript, any of those languages. But so how do I send queries to your service, and what would I be querying? Am I querying things that are already on the network? Is there a capability to get my own data into Truffler and have it indexed and queried?
We're using a great open source search engine that is called Elasticsearch, and it indexes JSON documents, just like RavenDB or Mongo or so on. But instead of being a pure document database, it's built on Lucene. And basically what it does is you push data to it in the form of JSON. And that could, of course, be a CLR object that has been serialized to JSON, or something from Java, or just pure JSON. And then you query it, and to query it, you again send JSON. So you send queries in the form of JSON objects, and they can be pretty complex. So that's pretty much it. Of course, you could hook up a crawler or something to it, but then you sort of start to lose the structure of the data.
Just to be clear, this is hosted search. So when I sign up for it, you give me some URLs, I put them in my config, and when I call into the search client, it's actually saving them all onto your server, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like any search engine or document database. So there's actually, we're building on Elasticsearch, and there's actually quite a few companies that use Elasticsearch as their primary database. So, I mean, in our case, that's not really the point. We're trying to build awesome search, but it's definitely stored.
Yeah, I can also add that you can get it as a Truffler in a box, where you get a server to your house, or so you can run it inside your own intranet if you would like.
Okay, good. And right on your homepage, you also have an example of a C# API that you can use, where it looks like it has some fluent methods that would, I'm assuming, get converted into a URL for your service.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of Truffler is the API, which is Elasticsearch, and we do some other funky stuff on top of Elasticsearch. We have a proxy that handles authentication that is built on using Node. But then the other part is the various integrations or client APIs that we're trying to provide, which is pretty much limited to the C# API at the moment. And what we've tried to do is instead of bringing your domain, your data to the search engine, we're trying to like bring the search engine to you, so you could query it in a way that feels natural in C#. So we're trying to provide a fluent API, not uber fluent. We're not trying to, you know, do the classical and dot or, but some nice method chaining and using expression trees and so on to try to map your domain to the search.
I ran through the sample that you had on your blog, and I noticed that, you know, it was readable, and also that when I kind of wanted to just experiment, that Fluent API, I was able to kind of just bang my way through it without having to dig into documentation too well. So I thought that the API definitely was very useful.
Yeah, that's sort of the the whole point of Truffler is to you know, search can be pretty complex. We, after all, on the call, we have two consultants that work pretty much solely with search. And it's a sort of foreign domain to many developers because it's something quite different. So we're trying to make that a lot easier and just, you know, make it as simple as it possibly could be, while still leaving you in control.
So I'm kind of curious. I mean, just taking a sample search that you have, which is let's search for the word seafood. And also have a geographical search, so the seafood that would appear within the location or the coordinates of East London. How does that go through the rest of the system? I mean, is it trying to assign importance and weight? And I imagine that's really the job of the behind-the-scenes search engine. But you know, do you have anything interesting to talk about in that kind of scenario, like what it would try to do in finding the result for that?
The example that you described now is the code sample that we have on the front page of truffler.net. And basically what we do there is we say search for restaurants for the search term seafood, and then we send in a filter where we filter for coordinates. So we want to find restaurants in a specific set of coordinates or within a bounding box. And of course, the search query here is seafood, the text that we're searching for. Mm-hmm. And that will, of course, just like any search engine, the result will be ordered by relevance. And then we say, okay, so let's filter for geographical coordinates, which doesn't affect scoring or doesn't affect the relevance. Mm-hmm. But we also have we really try to take fairly complex search things and make them easy. So we also have various methods controlling how the relevance is calculated. For instance, we have a method called boost matching, where you basically, you give me an expression. It could be like, I don't know, where author equals Scott, for instance. And you could say, okay, those hits that match that expression, give them double the relevance as opposed to those that doesn't.
Hmm. Interesting. So if you wanted to weight something also maybe by review, like an average review or something, that would be possible.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I've always wondered how Google does that when I'm somewhere and I'm searching for a place to have coffee and it comes up with some results that are really close and some results that are 10 miles away. But the ranking of reviews or the quality of the places is kind of varied. I don't know if there's a point to that story, but John.
Well, I worked on an enterprise search thing. It was it used iPhrase, and then they were bought by IBM, and I don't even know if they're still around. But and that was a huge, you know, at the beginning we implement the search, we get it set up, and we're like, yay, everybody can find things. And then began like several years of tuning based some on what users were trying to find, but also on business units of saying, hey, I want my information to rank higher on the list, and I want to feature this. And so the ability to easily modify that and rank things upper and lower, that sounds great, because in this case it was a lot of configuration files and Python hacking and all kinds of craziness.
Yeah, so in our case, I think I wrote a blog post a couple of days ago with a similar example. I had a car dealership where you wanted to, you know, the business wants to emphasize cars that they have in stock, or cars that where there's a new model coming soon, replacing that car, and you have those in stock, so you want to boost those. And I haven't worked with too many search engines, but I doubt there's that many that can do that in just a few lines of C# code. So I think that's pretty neat.
Hmm. Some of the technologies that you're building on, did you have to contribute any patches or make any patches or augment anything?
I know Henrik has pretty much gone through the Elasticsearch source code quite a few times, and but I mean it's a great project, and I think we've of course stumbled across a few bugs, but nothing major.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much no. I think our main challenge has been to find a way to package it in a nice way.
These features, like you've got geo search, also like searching in documents, including PDF and XML and Word and all that kind of stuff. Are those things that were also included in Elasticsearch and that you're exposing, or did you have to do some of that work in order to create those features?
So most features are basically just from the Elasticsearch core functions. Currently, the ones who are the modifications that we have on the Elasticsearch site at the moment are just bug fixes. So we don't expose currently any new functionality on top of Elasticsearch, but we will provide some features that we currently are working on that will be a little bit different than from the core project. But to take another question that we have been discussing around, from a search perspective, what we really are trying to do is to make search easier to use, in the sense that normally when you use enterprise search engines, you end up with you as a developer has to do all these analysis steps on your data before entering the index in order to support the kinds of queries that you want to do. And what we mostly have done is actually we are optimizing the index to support the queries that we provide through the API. So you don't have to think about how to analyze your data. It will be analyzed for you to support your queries. So you can search for words, and you can stem them in different languages, and we can have contains within words and so on, without the developer actually having to do the analysis steps.
I noticed another sample that you had out there was about searching blog posts for the word bacon, and then essentially getting out some blog post content with highlighted words in it. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so basically what we try to do is make dealing with highlight, which is just one case, but quite interesting, as easy as possible for developers that are maybe not accustomed to working with search engines, but are very accustomed to working with C#. We already had a method called select, which works pretty much as the select method in link. And we basically extended that to treat one method called as highlighted as special. So you could say select X goes to new, and then say content equals x.content.asHighlighted, for instance, and also send in some specifications of how the highlight should be, what the tags should be, and so on.
So can you walk through I've got a website, and I've got a bunch of, we've been talking about, say, blog posts. So how would I go about, I want to add search to my site. What's kind of the high level overview of the steps of what I need to do to set that up?
Sure. So it kind of depends on the nature of your website. You probably have some sort of, or actually you're a developer, so you probably built your own blog. But in the scenario that you have some sort of framework, you have some CMS or blog engine or something, there's usually some sort of event that occurs that you can listen to whenever a new blog post is added. But anyway, the basic step is, of course, you go to the site and you sign up and you create an index. And once you have created an index, you download the .NET API, or we're still working on the NuGet integration, and you copy and paste a little snippet of configuration that you need to have in your web.config. So basically everything in the Truffler API goes through a class called client. So what you do is you somehow retrieve your blog posts, and you say client.index, and you push those blog posts over to the search engine. But like I said, you probably might be working with some sort of blog engine. And so what you would do in that case is you would hook up to some event from whenever a new blog post is posted, and have it automatically be indexed. And that is also something we're working on integrations for various CMSs and frameworks at the moment. And there's also a couple of open source developers that are working on integrations for some open source CMSs.
So you're taking, on the .NET side, you're taking a bunch of .NET objects and turning them into JSON. What is that process like? I mean, how does a .NET developer who's got a bunch of domain objects make them work with your stuff? Do they have to derive from some special base class? Is there some sort of mapping process?
No, we're using JSON.NET, which is really a great open source product. So given that JSON.NET can serialize it, there's nothing you have to do. You do have to somehow specify an ID if you want to be able to update the object later. If you don't specify an ID, one will be generated and returned to you, but then you would have to store it. So you would probably, at the very least, specify an ID. And you can do that by annotating a property with an attribute, or you could configure this client class that everything goes through by basically we have a set of conventions, or what we want to call them, that you can configure using a bunch of extension methods. So you could say, like, for instance, for this type, retrieve the ID using this method or this property. Then, of course, if there's a really complex domain object which may have circular references, for instance, then you might want to tweak it a little. You might want to say that, okay, exclude this property and maybe include this property.
And so once we've got everything serialized and indexed, then I want to start querying this thing. And maybe I want to do that, do like a fancy Google Ajax type search where someone's typing in a text box and it's just starting to bring back results. That's a supported scenario, right?
Yeah, definitely. Question is how you want to build it. What we do is we give you two API keys, which are pretty much part of the URL. Mm-hmm. And one of them is you can do everything with it. And then there's the other one that's read only. So if you're comfortable with exposing your data in a read only way, you could build functionality that interacts directly with the REST API. And since it's all JSON, what you have to do is pretty much is build the query as a JavaScript object and then serialize it to JSON. So that's pretty straightforward. Okay. On the other hand, if you're paranoid or you don't want to expose your data at all, you would probably send all requests through the server and use SSL, and then you would probably proxy that request on your web server.
Right. Okay. So you'll support both JSON calls to your server, I guess through something like JSONP, as well as SSL connections from my server. If I want my JavaScript just to talk to my server, and then my server sends the secrets back and forth with your server, right?
Yeah, and yeah. JSONP is out of the box with Elasticsearch, so that's...
Okay. Any support for attachments or opaque things like Word and PDF?
Yeah, again, that's sort of out of the box with Elasticsearch, okay. Which in turn uses the Apache Tika project. I'm not sure that I got that right, but which handles PDFs and Word and a bunch of different formats.
Mm. That's neat. I mean, so on the time you've been working on this, what was the biggest challenge?
I think there's various aspects. There's everything from branding. I mean, we're developers to product, how to build a product and get a feel for the market. But I'm not sure. I think it was since we three come from different perspectives, it kind of depends on for me, it was understanding search and building an API that could map to the domain of search. Well, I guess for Henrik and Marcus, the biggest challenge was dealing with me, as I'm not a search developer.
Yeah, this isn't just some code that you slap together. This is actually a product and a business now. So was that new for the three of you, being moving into sort of a entrepreneur type thing?
Yeah, at least for me, I think it was for all three of us. We were sort of almost forced into this. This all started that when we worked for this customer together, and we built something. Basically, they had a problem in the sense that they had a lot of data, and they needed to be able to search for it, but they also needed to be able to query it, and it wasn't stored in a database that where you could use. It wasn't stored in a normalized database, and even if it had been, the queries would have been sort of slow. So there was, I wouldn't say that it was the first prototype, but it was the initial seed of Truffler, where we found the idea of building it. And once we had done that, I sort of thought to myself that, hey, I don't want to build a public website without being able to do this again.
Mm, good point. And so, I mean, you've put together a pretty diverse collection of technology, it sounded like. I think you mentioned, you have mentioned Elasticsearch quite a few times, but did you also mention Node earlier?
Yeah, we use Node as a reverse proxy for doing authorization and so on to the Elasticsearch server. So we don't expose the Elasticsearch servers to the net directly, but you have to go through a Node proxy.
Okay.
And if I can add to the previous question also, I think the question regarding what was the most difficult part, I think all of us coming from being a consultant, we always come into projects where we actually know exactly what the customers want and what the system is going to do. And when we started with this, we slowly realized that we're building something and we know what it's capable of and we know what we want to do with it, but we have to let it go and prepare for just showing others what they can do, but we can't control how it's used. And it's a at least for me, it's both scary and really exciting to see how people are using it.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, it was like Henrik said before. When you build an enterprise search, you have to analyze the data so you really have to know what kind of queries are asked in before they actually come. Now we sort of adapt it so we can handle so many queries. So it's a strange feeling, not knowing what people are going to use it for, really.
So when I was using it was very quick response, but I'm wondering if I'm going to use it a lot on my side, would you expect that, you know, an end user would cache results or do some sort of caching on the client side? Do you have any support for that in your API for caching?
The clusters that we have can handle quite a lot of traffic, but of course there's always the issue with latency. So what we do is we give you the possibility to, in the .NET API, to cache search queries. I think we managed to build that in a pretty neat way. So since we serialize the search query, we sort of have a natural cache key already. So you don't have to bother with supplying cache keys and so on. And you can also supply a cache dependency object so that you are able to release it should you want to. So in that way, search queries, we definitely recommend caching. It's not a requirement in any way, but just to minimize latency. For indexing, of course, there's no point in caching. But for GET requests and so on, we don't currently have caching. They're pretty quick, but I think we'll add that in the future.
What is next now that you have this open to the public? Are you waiting for feedback, or do you already have some features that you want to get in there?
Oh, there's so many features that we want to get in there, but we're very eager to receive feedback. We do have a couple of partners or customers that are currently testing with pretty large sets of data. We're really looking forward to hearing from them and improving their experience should there be a need. There's a lot of things in the API, for instance, that we don't currently expose in the .NET API. We can do some pretty funky stuff. So there's a lot of things to do, and also we wanna provide you as much flexibility as possible. So there's always options there. For instance, to connect back to the question that Kevin asked before regarding serialization and so on. For instance, what we have today is it's not just the object that you can serialize. You can also tell using conventions. You can say that whenever this type is serialized, also serialize this method call to it, for instance, and things like that. Providing the maximum amount of flexibility is sort of our goal. And there's, of course, more to be done there.
Yeah, we're also looking to... Today the reverse proxy, the node reverse proxy stores all the requests and logs and so forth. So we're going to build something around that you could have some live updates on requests and queries and that users are doing to your data.
Hmm.
That was my next question. I was wondering, you know, around the information that I can get over what people are searching for. So right now, I guess I could store my own metrics because I'm handling the searching, but you're saying that's another feature is that I would be able to analyze, that you would provide some information about how my search is being used?
Yeah, that's the plan. We are, so far, we only gather the information. We don't have any way to actually give it back to you yet, but we're working on that, and we got some ideas for it. We also got some ideas that are really early about doing a... Today, you can use it over SSL then, so you can have a encrypted communication, but we also been talking about having a completely encrypted index, so everything is also encrypted in the index. But that's really on the planning stage so far.
One of the things I saw in the pricing chart was support for custom synonyms. And can you explain what those are?
Yeah, when you have when you're searching for a word, you could actually provide your own synonyms for that word. So like on a general level. So whenever someone is searching for, this is a well-used example in the search, but if you use MP3 player, you will have a synonym for iPod within that system. So you can actually find both types.
Very good. Yeah, and the plans and pricing, it looks like if you're a developer who wants to try it out, it's free. And then it's basically by the number of documents that you have stored. That's what would determine when you have to move up from to like a basic plan and then a premium plan and so forth, right?
Yeah. Well, there's the number of documents, but also some features. Currently, we have the developer plan, which is basically if you're a developer and you have your own blog or you want to just try it out or you have some funky project that you're not making a lot of money from, you can get it for free. And then we have the basic and premium plans, which is pretty much, I don't like the term, but I guess the idea is the premium should be the enterprisey alternative. You know, you want your data encrypted and you want to index Word and PDF documents and so on. So that's the general idea. Well, if you just want search and querying capabilities for your domain objects, then basic should probably be fine.
So you did mention with the developer license then, so that if I have, say, an open source project or something, that's something that I would be able to, requirements are non-commercial use and a link required. So I'm able to, like, I get a lot of features, including indexing of documents like Word and PDF and that sort of thing. And I can use it in my site and just link back.
Yeah, pretty much. I think we say in the FAQ that it should be development related. So basically, what we want to do is we want developers to try it out, and we want them to use it and feel free to continue using it. If you have, I don't know, your phishing site, we'd appreciate it if you send us an email and just check that it's okay. But we will probably say yes.
So how does this compare to other search engine options that are out there and also to, other document databases? Like you mentioned earlier, you're talking about RavenDB. You know, how does this kind of fit in with all my options there?
So compared to RavenDB or other document databases, you can pretty much use it or you can use it as a document database, but that's not the, and it's good for that, but that's not the primary purpose of it. And, if you compare it to Raven, for instance, you have features like, some sort of transaction handling and you can say wait for stale, non-stale results and so on. And also Raven does have some basic text, or I don't know how basic, some text searching capabilities as well. So I would say that compared to Raven is an awesome document database with basic text search, while this is awesome text search with basic document database capabilities. As compared to other search engines, I think maybe Henrik, would you want to take that?
If we compare it, it is Elasticsearch, from a search perspective, if we take hardcore search, I think our main idea is not to provide any more like core search functionality, but we want to enable developers to utilize search without being search experts, basically. We have like state of the art stuff, and I really enjoy working with Elasticsearch, and there's some really interesting development going on in all different directions. I think one of our like main features also the language support that we want to be able to provide good language support out of the box, so to speak, for our customers to use.
Pardon my inexperience at search, but when you talk about language support, would that be something like someone searches for a term in German, but you do some translations behind the scenes?
No, mostly it's if you search for different forms of a word, like if you search for bike, we also find the plural forms that bikes and so on. And in Swedish, we try to find compound words where you actually, like in Swedish, we don't separate the words. We just put them together into one big one, and we try to find the word parts and those kinds of features.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. That's good. And it looks like the last thing you released, or just recently, was a client for EpiServer, which I understand is pretty big in Sweden.
Yeah, it's the dominating CMS in Sweden, used by I don't know how many companies and municipalities and so on. So considering that there's pretty much all of our friends pretty much work with EpiServer, it was a natural step to build the first integration for EpiServer. And by integration, we pretty much mean that you don't need to take care of indexing. We will do that for you. We will hook up to events and so on. Mm. And then we have in the .NET API, we have the concept of, like I mentioned before, filtering, which is pretty much similar to the link where method. Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to, or both we and developers using the API have the ability to extend that. So it's, you can sort of, per integration, per CMS or other system, you can build sort of your own little DSL within the DSL.
And this is not an open source project, right? I mean, you don't publish the source code to this at all?
No, not at the moment. It's open for download. And I think we say in some text file that you're welcome to decompile it if you're not doing it for evil reasons. but we're not exposing the source code at the moment. Maybe we will be in the future. I'm not sure. But it's I mean, the .NET API is a very important part of our product offering at the moment, and we worked very hard on it and do some really cool stuff within it, like projections from different types and so on. And at the moment, we would like to keep that sort of to ourselves, but we do value openness. So we'll I think maybe in the future we'll release it as open source. We'll have to see. But basically, we would be very fine with releasing it as open source as long as you use it with Truffler.
Okay, guys. So we've talked about Truffler. Anything else new and exciting in your lives that's coming up?
Well, more Truffler. From my perspective, for anyone that wants to check out Truffler more and have a beer, I'll be in Copenhagen at the end of October, and in Oslo in November, as well as Malmö in December, and maybe in London as well sometime in December. So I'd love to meet you and demo Truffler more.
Oh, very good. I'll be in Oslo at the end of November, so maybe we can run into each other. What about Henry? Anything?
Yeah, I'll be going to Oslo in the next week and showing some stuff. It's always fun to show people what you've done now that we have released it. So it's exciting.
Yeah, and we're always looking for people to show it to. So if someone wants a demo and it's possible for us to go there, just contact us and we'll come.
Are you all three based in Stockholm?
No, I live in Umeå, quite north of Stockholm. But
okay, so it's not like you're just meeting at night in someone's basement and banging on this thing.
No, we're meeting at our own apartments and communicating through Skype, yep. Which usually goes better than this.
Right.
And we might also want to mention that the people that sign up for Truffler from the United States at the moment, they get routed to a cluster in Ireland. So if there's some lag, it's due to that. But there's an American cluster coming up soon as well. So
very good.
What's the best way to keep up with what's going on with Truffler? I mean, I would guess there's a, you know, there's Truffler site, truffler.net, and then on the about page you've got links to all your Twitter and blogs as appropriate. Is that kind of the best way to keep up with what's going on?
Yeah, we have a blog set up specifically for Truffler, but we haven't really had time to link it in on the site in a nice way yet. So most of the blog posts has come out through my personal blog, but we'll fix that in the future. But yeah, pretty much the site, and I guess at the moment my blog. But we're working on better ways of distributing news. You know, building the site is sort of the boring part.
And just for people who may not know, Truffler is obviously a reference to the animal that goes out and searches for truffles, which are hard to find, right? So your mascot is a pig. Did one of you draw that?
No. basically, I mean, we're developers, so coming up with a name and not to mention a logo was extremely hard. So we what we try to do is utilize existing services as much as we've been able to. So we basically went out and found a site that sold logotypes, and I think this the logo that we have is due to all of our wives liking it and thinking it was cute, and I mean then you can't say no, right?
Oh, that's interesting. We should have a show sometime on starting our business. So you went out and found a service that helped you not only select the name, but also come up with the logo. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, they, and I think we bought this from a site called Brandstack, brandstack.com. Mm-hmm. And they have both, you can submit what you want, and some designer will come up with something for you. But they also have existing logotypes that you can just buy off the shelf. And that's actually what we did.
Okay.
And one thing that is pretty good with having a pig as a logo is that it's awesome for presentations. You always get a laughter in the beginning of the presentation.
Yep.
Awesome.
Promoting Truffle is something that's totally new to us. Like, you know, like Joel said, we're developers, so we're not really used to distribute the information about stuff we do. That's usually up to other people. So we're learning as we go along on that part.
Okay, very good. So any last words from anyone?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, sure.
I have one last question. K-Scott, you met the Truffler guys recently, right?
Well, I have met Joel. I can never say it right, so I just say Joel. I've met Joel a couple times, sure.
Okay. I was just curious. Yeah,
we met in Stockholm a couple years ago, and then he tends to pop up at European places that I'm at, so...
Got it. Yeah. Somehow we always seem to meet when we both need some air. I don't know.
Yeah. That's good. All right. Let me close down the show. So that concludes this episode of Herding Code. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And tune in to the next episode.
So after the show, I was chatting with the guys a bit more about the developer getting started experience. And while you can set up an account for free and just start playing with it, it's not very hard to do. I recommended that they add a read-only account so that you didn't need to set anything up and you could just play with it right away. So that's available now at sampler.truffler.net. And there's also a NuGet package, and that's available in the NuGet gallery as Truffler. Thanks, guys.